Our program. I'm Francine and I'm an addict.
Hey, Francine.
First of all, let me say my disease is alive and well in me right now because I am scared.
It's okay.
First, I want to thank God just for allowing me to be here today. I just got here just a few minutes ago, so a lot of things happened to stop me from getting here, but I was going to come anyway. And I also want to thank the host committee for asking me to come share and seeing enough in me just to invite me here. To briefly qualify myself as an addict, I do not talk about my story because my story is not all that bad. I ain't have a bad drug log, but I will talk about my bottom. September of 93, I was picked up on Eastern Avenue. Where D.C. at? Y'all know where Eastern Avenue at, right? Picked up on Eastern Avenue, taken to a rock quarry, and raped repeatedly for about 3 hours. I was raped to the point where I was choked, passed out, brought back, choked some more. And the guy raped me so much the last time he came, nothing came out. When he finished, all I could do was get up and laugh to keep from crying. And he looked at me and he said, "Why should I let you live?" And at that point, I was really scared. The only thing that I can think about at the time, my daughter was about 18 months and I was actually ready to be a mother for her because I couldn't see her growing up without me. And that's what I told him. I said, "I'm ready to be a mother to my daughter." I was so beaten and so battered, he actually had to take me one house from my home. I'm talking about a man that just raped me repeatedly. He took me one house from my home. And I say that because my story wasn't all that graphic, but my end is what keep me here. Because if I decide to use again and start working steps, that's where I'm going to end up. The eighth step. In order for me to talk about the eighth step, I got to talk about the preceding seven that come before. And that's just for me. Step one, admitted that I was powerless. See, that was easy for me. The hard part for me was understanding the unmanageability because in my mind, unmanageability meant that I could not manage my money, I smoked too much crack. But as I stayed, I learned that unmanageability meant that I had a problem with managing my feelings and my emotions. That's what unmanageability means to me today. Step two, coming to believe that a power greater than myself can restore me to some sanity was the most important step for me. Because in order for me to get better, I have to believe that there is some restoration going to take place and going to move me to somewhere else. I'm real nervous, y'all.
It's okay. It's okay.
Step three, made a decision, and that was hard because I thought I had to be this holy roller and I couldn't do nothing, I couldn't cuss, and I like to cuss, y'all, and I ain't cuss yet. Getting better. And I had to do everything according to the good book. You know what I'm saying? And step three really means to me now is just letting God in. You know what I'm saying? And allowing him to reign in my life. Real simple. And understanding that I'm still human and that I'm going to fall short and I'm going to make mistakes. But if I give it to God, it can always get better. Step four, Francina 101. Real simple. That's what it was. It introduced me to who I was, what I was capable of doing, and even things that I was capable of doing that I didn't even imagine that I could do. It allowed me to see on paper who I really was, and it wasn't pretty. I'm going to keep moving because what I see is my fourth step in my head. So I'm going to keep moving. Step five, admitting to God, to myself, and to another human being. My wrongs was, it was easy. After seeing step four and seeing me who I really was, I had to tell somebody because somebody had to tell me that they did the same things that I did and I wasn't that bad. Step five was real rough for me because when I shared my first fifth step with my sponsor, she never called me again. And I'm like, wow. You know what I'm saying? So it was real hard for me. So when I moved into 6 and 7, it was typically a padded playground. You know what I'm saying? I was already wide open. I felt real abandoned. You know what I'm saying? It's not a good thing to be on 6 and 7 and not have no sponsor, y'all.
Right.
I'm telling you, because in order to understand what the defects are, they got to come to surface. In order to understand the difference between a defect and a shortcoming, you got to fall short. And I was in the midst of my defects and falling short, and I ain't had no sponsor. Okay? So somewhere in that process, I got a sponsor, and I made it through, which brings me to the eighth step. And it's amazing that I'm asked to speak on this step, because that's right where I'm at. You know what I'm saying? God is bringing me through a lot of things in my life. And, you know, I don't know about y'all, but when I come through, I hurt a lot of people. When I come through, when I go through, when I end up, I hurt a lot of people. That's the nature of the beast. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. I had to break that thing down in two parts. Because I wasn't willing to make amends to everybody. And it's a few people on the list I'm still not. However, I was willing to put them on the list. And my sponsor told me, as long as I'm willing to put them on the list, God will make a way for me to become willing to make amends when he presents the opportunity. The first list I wrote, it was real short. It was like three people. I've been around just for a little while, and I wrote three eighth steps. First list was real short, real short. I didn't think I hurt nobody. I ain't think I caused nobody harm. You know what I'm saying? I ain't steal nobody money. Whoever I beat up deserved it. You know what I'm saying? It was real simple. I ain't hurt nobody. And as I stayed around here, my second eighth step got longer, but the most of the people was on the eighth step was people who I've harmed clean, which allowed me to see the people that I harmed while I was using in a totally different light. Y'all know they make them new light bulbs now that when you get up underneath that, you see everything. Everything is just crystal clear. And that's what the eighth step shows me. The harm that I caused without justifying where they did this, and I did it because of this, and I just had a bad day. Because, you know, I use that as an excuse to cause harm because I'm having a bad day. So I made the list, and I'm talking to my sponsor, and I run across some folks that I ain't feeling. I ain't forgave them. I don't like them. You know what I'm saying? But I caused them a lot of harm. Because I can be real evil and real mean and real raunchy, and I got a tongue that will cut like a sword whenever I want it to. You know? And it's easy. It's easy to back people off of you with your mouth. It's real easy. Because the old way I used to fight, and I can't go to jail, y'all. I won't make it to jail, so. I keep making this list, and the more people I put on the list, the more people that I remember that need to go on the list. You know what I'm saying? And I'm like, wow, am I this bad of a person? You know, and my sponsor clearly told me to know you're not a bad person, you just done some bad things. And that helped me move into being willing to make amends. Then the amends piece for me is real easy because you know how you got some people who can't say they're sorry, won't say they're sorry, and they always right? Well, I'm the type of person, I ain't got a problem letting you know that I was wrong, and I apologize. But the second part of an apology is not doing it again. You feel what I'm saying? That's the restitution piece. And see, I keep doing it over and over and over and over, so I'm full of I'm sorry's. You know what I'm saying? And the next time I write another list, that same person's still on the list because I'm still doing the same thing. You know, the eighth step in the process of writing the list, it allows me to reflect back on the steps prior because those are the steps that prep me to make the list. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I'm grateful I came through 6 and 7 without causing that much damage. Most of the damage caused was to myself. Even though my sponsor never called me back, and I see her right now to this day, and I don't even ask her why. Because as a sponsor myself, I know sponsors go through stuff. And it ain't always about the sponsee's stuff. You know what I'm saying? And I don't think I dropped that much of a heavy hit on her that she couldn't call me no more. Wasn't that bad. Making amends for me is simply not initiating nothing. You know what I'm saying? Not initiating nothing, and for the newcomer, and for anybody that's in the room that hasn't done an eighth step, please do 1 through 7 first. Please. That's why the steps are in order the way they are. You know what I'm saying? They're in order for that reason, because when I got here, I knew off the break, I said there were some things that I needed to apologize for before I even started this process. And my sponsor told me, if it's that important, God will make a way, and if he don't make a way, you need to leave it alone. You know what I'm saying? Because a lot of times when you make amends, people ain't always ready for your amends. And they don't say nice things. You know what I'm saying? And they take you back to wherever you come from. I came from 58 and Blaine. That's where I came from. It was rough up there. And I don't like going back there. I don't like being Fanny. I like being Francina M. today. There's some folks, some new folks that's on the list. I'm talking about real recent. I mean, real recent. and it's one brother and two sisters. One of the sisters I don't even know. Never even met her. All I know is her name and what she sound like. She on my list because of my thoughts. See, we got to remember, if we think it, it's just as worse as saying it. You know what I'm saying? Then the other sister that's on my list, I see her on a regular basis. I got to hug her in spite of how I feel, because what I really think when I see her is I want to choke her till she pass out, bring her back because I'm CPR certified, then choke her again. That's where I'm at with her. So that just let y'all know how crazy I am. And then the brother that's on the list, I don't know. I consider him a friend, but he petty. You know what I'm saying? He petty and he did something real dog, and I ain't trying to make amends. I will when I get ready. You know what I'm saying? And that's me stepping outside of God's will instead of doing what God has already prompted me to do. You know what I'm saying? The best part about the eighth step, as long as I allow God into the eighth step, he will allow all of my amends to take place, even if I never have to open my mouth. That's the best part. You know what I'm saying? I got a few folks in my life call me Holy Roller. Because I try to live a spiritual life. And that's because I know where I come from. You know what I'm saying? I know where I come from. And if I don't live a spiritual life, I ain't trying to go back to that Quarkroy where that guy raped me at. I ain't trying to go back there. You know what I'm saying? I walked away with my life, and it ain't had nothing to do with luck. So what I do, I keep coming to meetings, and I get beat up a lot about going to meetings with some of my peers because of the kind of work that I do. I can't always get to a meeting in areas that I live in. And that's a whole nother meeting. It's a whole nother meeting. But I am connected to people who work a program of recovery. I am connected to a sponsor. I do step work. I pray. I help people with no strings attached, and that is what the program requires of you. When the guy called me and asked me to do this meeting, I thought of every reason not to. Because, see, this is a lot of people. And normally when I walk in a step meeting, ain't too many people in a step meeting. Come on now, y'all know. Ain't too many people in no step meeting, so my rationale was, ain't too many people coming. You know what I'm saying? I know a lot of people, but a lot of people don't like me. Because I'll tell you the truth about who you are by telling the truth about who I am. You know what I'm saying? So I step on a lot of toes, and I ain't mad. My job paid me to tell you the truth. So it has become a way of life. I don't know. I'm at a stuck point. I done went from 1 through 8. So if I go any further, I'm going to start telling y'all a bunch of lies. So I want to say thanks for letting me share.
At this time, I'll give you our second speaker. Her name is Jean.
Hi, family. I'm Jean. I'm an addict.
Hey, Jean.
Oh, God. I'm scared. But it's okay. You know, but for God's grace and his mercy. I thank him so much for his unconditional love. I want to thank the Montgomery area and Major for asking me to come out and share my experience, strength, and hope. And I'm truly honored and grateful anytime I could be of service to Narcotics Anonymous. Anytime I could be of service to Narcotics Anonymous, it truly is a privilege. And you know what? I have to say, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for my network. I think I have the most awesome network there is. And my recovery family and my sponsor. You know, I thank you people for all that you do, your support, love, and just encouragement, acceptance. You know, when Major asked me to speak on the eighth step, I was thinking, whew, that was a turning point again in my life. The eighth step for me, making a list of all persons I had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. I was at a point in my recovery where the shame, the guilt, the remorse, the regret, and all this stuff was keeping me imprisoned. I couldn't look people in the eye still. I was full of a lot of fear. I was full of this negative self-talk. You know, I was at a point where the things I had done, I could no longer live with comfortable in my skin. I harmed a lot of people along the way. I started using at the age of 8. I started drinking Jamaican white rum. And when I got here, I was 26 years old. I had a lot of material things, so I didn't think I was so bad off. But the longer I stayed here and got honest with myself, I found out that I lost the most valuable thing that I had, which was me. And through the help of you people and working with a sponsor and developing a relationship with the God of my understanding, y'all was able to help me to rebuild that relationship. And that's a big part of the eighth step for me, building the relationship with the God of my understanding, myself, and another human being. I had to be willing to practice the honesty, the courage, the willingness, compassion, acceptance, trust, and forgiveness. And forgiveness was hard because, see, I came in as a victim. You know, you did this, so I did that. You know, I could tell y'all all the things that my mother did, my father did, you know, and all these people that had harmed me. But I wouldn't so willingly share about all the stuff I had did to them and those along the way. I had to step out on that third step decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God and trust that he will guide me. He will show me, and you people will teach me how to live. And I had to practice all the principles from the previous steps. Again, honesty, willingness, courage, acceptance, humility. To accept myself in the moment where I was at the time. And when I wrote my eight-step list, my sponsor instructed me to take the names from my resentment list in the fourth step resentment list, and transfer those names onto my eighth step list. And I had to look at all those people and all the things that I had done in the fourth step and be able to transfer some of those names and things over to the eighth step. Then I thought about all the other people that were not included in my fourth step that had harmed. And I list those people. Then I had to list the harm I had done to them. You know, and when I looked, I would say a lot of stuff, the harm I caused was not intentional. It was not intentional. I was acting truly out of a lot of defects, especially self-centered fear. I abandoned a lot of relationships. I had no problem. I didn't have to, and it wasn't so much what I said or what I did. A lot of it is what I didn't do. And when I looked at the harm, it was abandonment. It was abandoning relationship. It was disrespect. It was anger, rage, physical abuse, mental abuse, emotional abuse, threatening people, just discomfort that I caused in anybody that was around me. Because, see, I was one of these addicts that came in here real, real angry. And it was a lot of times I didn't do a whole lot of fellowshipping with y'all because I couldn't trust myself. It wasn't I couldn't trust you, I couldn't trust me. Because, see, if I thought you hurt me, what I would do. And I didn't have a whole lot of cut cards. I didn't have a whole lot of them. And I was capable of anything. I had gotten to a point in my life where I was able to accept I was capable of anything. I was no longer trying to play that role of that nice person. You know, I had gotten to a point of humility where I could accept myself in the moment, knowing that I was under construction and the work wasn't finished yet. I just had to keep going one day and one step at a time. After I made the list, my sponsor suggested we meet to go over the list. And I had added a bunch of names, you know, the foster child, my mother, father, myself is not at the top and I'm not at the end. I'm in the middle of that list. I looked at the list this morning and I had to laugh when I saw my name in the middle. I said, oh, okay, so I wasn't at the top and I wasn't at the end. I was just there in the middle. You know, and I added a lot of people to the list, my daughter, family, friends, you know, people that had been there for me that often I couldn't be there for them. And when the process was to meet with my sponsor and for her to look at this list, we sat down and, you know, even before we got to that point, I remember going downtown D.C., 14th Street, and we met. And she said, okay, we're going to get some dinner. We're going to go back to my office. And I said, okay, and we got dinner, and we got back to her office, and she started hemming and hawing, and Gene, I need to tell you something. And I'm looking at her, because she has never been afraid to say anything, you know, and I'm looking at her like, what is it she going to say? But she went on to say, Gene, you're not trusting. I said, I'm not trusting. She says, no, you're not trusting, and you can't go on in the eighth step without trust. I had the willingness to put the names down on the list, but I needed some trust. And when she said that, I remember just looking at her. And I didn't ask any questions. We just sat down and went over the list. And I left there that evening thinking, in order for her to see so clearly that I'm not trusting, it got to be my higher power. It's nobody but the God of my understanding. It wasn't that I wasn't trusting her. I wasn't trusting God that everything was going to be okay and I could be honest about what I had done and who I had done it to. And I rode home with that praying, God, just help me to be honest and to be accepting, to be trusting of you, that everything is going to be all right. I could put the names, all the names of the people at home on this list. And we made another date to meet, and when we met the second time, she started helping me eliminating some people off my list. And one that stands out so much in my mind was my father. I had my father on the list. And my father molested me. And I confronted him. And when I confronted him and the family and stuff like that, because I knew it was something inside of me that told me if this man raped me, I'm a killer. And I knew it with all my heart. And I had put him on my list. And my sponsor looked at me and said, Gene, what kind of amends can you make to a person that molested you? And it was taking responsibility for my part. It wasn't so much his part, it was my part that I needed to look at. But I felt guilty and I felt ashamed and I felt real bad. Because when he looked at me, he says, you're nothing but a devil. And it's because I had exposed his secret. And I thought I had done something wrong. All I did was try to protect myself and take care of myself the best way I knew how in that situation. All I knew, I couldn't let this man rape me. And I had to hold that. And as she told me, "Gene, what kind of amends you can make to him? You didn't do anything wrong, baby. All you did was take care of yourself." And I was able to let that piece go and scratch his name off the list. I had the foster child who I try to help raise. And, you know, I don't know. I know there is a God. Because without God, I don't know how that young lady, I was able to take care of that young lady and my daughter and myself in active addiction. But I had to let her go because I could no longer take care of her and do what I need to do for me, which was to try to focus on getting clean and staying clean. I had always been able to stop for a period of time, but I always went back to active addiction. So it was trying to get clean and stay clean, and someone suggested I let her go because God was going to take care of her. There was a God and it wasn't me. And I needed to trust and know that this child was not me. I was trying to take care of me through her. And I let her go, and I felt I needed to put her on the list because I couldn't. I had gotten to a point where I couldn't take care of her. And I also remember slapping her one day that she flew across the floor, and she was just so excited. "Ooh, mommy hit me." And I was like, "Come get her." I called social service and said, "Come get her. I can't do this. I've never hit my child like that." Because, see, she came from off the streets, and all she knew was what she knew, and to her, love meant, if you slap me, if you hit me, then you love me. And she would push to the brink, and I couldn't control it. And I hit her. And I remember them coming in and saying, "No, please, just continue to take care of her." And I couldn't. I had to let her go. I couldn't save her and save me at the same time. And I had to make a decision and trust that God would take care of her. So my sponsor helped me to eliminate some more names off the list. There was one person from my fourth step that I looked this morning at my fourth step and I looked at the eighth. And this person was my mother-in-law, who I stole $10,000 from. She had given me $10,000 in a brown paper bag. And we had a disagreement, and I told her, "Fuck you, your money is gone because you're not getting it." And I blew that money on drugs, clothes, and everything else. And I could not see, when I went over my fourth step, I could not see why I wasn't justified in doing what I did. And in my fifth step, my sponsor told me, "I think we may just need to kind of look at things a little different. Look at it a little differently, Gene. Maybe this woman was trying to protect her son. Maybe she was trying to protect her unborn grandchild. Because, see, my daughter babysitter was now pregnant from my ex. And this woman had bought this young lady to come and sit out in front of my house." And I was like, "Oh." I was like that. And what I couldn't say to her is that I'm hurt because you're showing the love that you have showed to me to somebody else. How could you do that? But when my sponsor showed to me, "Gene, maybe she was just taking care of this young lady because that's who was important to her son at the moment, and she was protecting her unborn grandchild." I don't understand it. I have no understanding of that concept. I have no understanding. I owe her nothing. But by the time I got to my eighth step, she was on the list. And during that second meeting, one of the things that my sponsor helped me to do was to sit and look at how I could make amends. We're not talking about making amends. The possibilities and the method in which I could make amends. Because, see, some of mine was not, "I'm sorry." It was a whole lot more. There's no way I could go to this woman and tell her I'm sorry for stealing your $10,000. When I first got here, I used to say I took her money. I stayed here long enough to get honest with myself to say I stole her money. It wasn't mine to take. And I had to look at how could I repay $10,000. Could I hold her that money? It wasn't mine. And we talked about ways and method in which to make amends, you know, to my child, because there were some amends I could not make directly. There were some that were direct and there were some that were indirect. and had to decide where these people go, who could I make a direct amends to, and the ones that I needed to make indirect amends to. Because there was no way I was going to go to my brother-in-law after cutting this package and stuffing it with cut, after stealing his dope and cutting it with putting cut in there, I'm going to go tell him I'm sorry for setting you up and stealing your drugs. And by then he was incarcerated, and she was trying to help me figure out ways that I can make these amends but not get directly linked back into the lifestyle. Because, see, I came in here as is, and I was doing a whole lot of crazy stuff, but y'all loved me, y'all accepted me and stuff. But one thing for sure, I did not want to return to selling drugs or living in active addiction. So there were some people that, yeah, I could say I'm sorry to, and I could do some things better, you know, send birthday cards, whatever, acknowledge their birthday, do different little things like that. But when we looked at the $10,000 I had owed, what my sponsor suggested was, Gene, keep in mind, you don't run out there now that you have done this list and decide who you're going to make amends to and when. This is where you have to trust that God is going to present the where and when. He's going to present where you should make it and when you should make it. So you don't have to worry about that piece. Let that go. That's part of your third step decision, Gene. Let it go. You just be willing. That's your piece. Take responsibility for your action and be willing. And that's what I did. One of the things she suggested is, when the time comes, if I do not have the financial means to make this amends, consider taking a bill from this lady, asking her for one bill, and paying that bill consistently. Because, see, what I did was betray her trust. She also gave her kids $10,000 in a paper bag, too, her four kids. She knew they were going to spend her money, but she knew Jean was going to have her money. She knew that without a shadow of a doubt. And I was not trustworthy at the point. At that point in my active addiction, I was not trustworthy. There's no addict I know that is trustworthy, loving. No, not with $10,000 in my hands. I was not trustworthy. And I betrayed her trust. And it was real important to me to rebuild trust. It wasn't so much to pay that money as it was to rebuild the trust and to become trustworthy again, to rebuild the relationship with the God of my understanding, to rebuild the relationship with myself and with my heart, to get rid of that resentment, the anger, the remorse, the guilt, the shame. I wanted to look people in their eyes. I wanted to feel equal to another human being. And I couldn't do that with all that baggage. So she made that suggestion, and I wrote it down, and, you know, we left it at that. So for me, the eighth step was making the list of the people at harm, identifying the harm that I had done, and just being willing to make the amends and trusting that God will present the where and when. And all I had to do is be willing and to go with it. I thank God for you people. I thank God for my sponsor that guided me through that process, because it wasn't that bad. It gave me a lot of freedom. I started sleeping all night because, see, up until that point, I couldn't sleep all night. My mind was busy. It was just a lot of fear. And seeing people that I know I had done things to and couldn't figure out a way how I could make it right. I couldn't clean up all the mess that I had made in one day. So I had to trust that God was going to take care of it, you know, and everything would be okay. And that's basically what I did in my eighth step. Thanks for letting me share.
I'd like to thank our speakers. And at this time, we'll open the meeting up. If anyone would like to share, come up to the podium and speak.
Hello, my name is Ngozi, and I'm an addict.
Hey, Ngozi.
And I'd like to thank the God of my understanding. The older I get, the more I come to believe there's a power. And I felt this power since I got here today. And I'd like to thank both of the speakers for sharing on the eighth step. You know, that's true. I had just told my lady just now that. And I have to say, it is a judgment. You know, because I come from Brooklyn. And our meetings, we have a lot of meetings in Brooklyn area. And our meetings are very packed. When you go into a step in a tradition meeting, you can always get a seat. It's always empty. You know, I like a step meeting because it is our program. And I remember when I first came here and I looked at the steps and the traditions, that stuff just really, really didn't apply to me. And I knew that because anybody that I harmed, they had it coming to them. And I really didn't do a whole lot of harm to anybody. I really didn't even recognize the harm that I did to myself. I had to keep coming. And what my sponsor did, he laid out that the first seven steps asked me exclusively, you know, to work on myself. I heard one of the sisters say that there was seven previous steps to help us with the eighth step. And the eighth step starts the process of forgiveness. They said, we forgive. Hopefully we're forgiven. But lastly, we do the big one. We learn how to forgive ourselves. It helps us, me included, with that guilt. And it helps the other people with their anger. You know, from that four-step list, I had to put names, dates, and places. I heard this your sister here. That eighth step asked me to be not only admitted in the fourth step, copping out to the defects, which lies in my personality, but there's some assets in that fourth step too. I wasn't perfectly good or perfectly bad. I found that in the fourth step. But what the eighth step asked me to do was just simply take a list and put it on paper and be willing to take another look at the damage that I'd done to everybody that came in contact with. And I heard somebody say it in the other meeting when I was able to take a second look, and it was only then that I was able to see the damage that I've done to myself. They talk about the eight steps starts the process of forgiveness, and it is the test. There's a test there of that newfound humility. I had to get humble, you know, humble. But I heard you said, I believe you said it, I had to take something in there with me, and it wasn't me. I had to take God into that step and be able to be willing to make amends. And I heard the sister say that it wasn't all about talking about, I'm sorry. My sponsor had a dictionary. He had me to take a look at what the dictionary was talking about, amends. And they said it's to correct, to change, or to improve upon. I can't come and tell you I'm sorry without some kind of restitution. I don't go to the cop man and say I'm sorry for running off with your package. But the most important thing about the eighth step is separating it from the ninth. Separating it. I can't put somebody on that list for fear of procrastination. But I had to do something that my sponsor also asked me to do, to put myself on the list. And I did a whole lot of harm to myself. And over a lot of years, and even in recovery, I wasn't the father that I know today that I can be and the man that I could have been. I'm trying today just to live a little bit better. I'm not perfectly wonderful or marvelous. And I can't walk on water and bend still with my bare hands. I don't try to do that and leave with the leap over tall buildings. But I thank God that I'm not the person that I was when I walked in the meetings. And I need everybody that's in this room and in any convention that I go to. And when I think I need you the less, I need you the most. I love conventions, man, because they gave up on us. And I want to close with this. I don't know about Maryland, but I know in New York, they had a law called the Rockefeller Law. And it was against the law for any two addicts to be together. You got locked up for that. You got locked up for internal possession. If the police came and thought you was high, you went to jail. If you did anything to your family, they call that a civil commitment. They locked you up for years, I'm talking about. The same people that locked us up for being together, I'm talking about the court system, is the same people that's sending us back to us again. They're sentencing people to Narcotics Anonymous. They said that we're going to always be an addict and we're going to never amount to nothing. We are the only thing that society has left, the cornerstones. And the ironic thing about it is the same people that I destroyed myself with, these are the same people that's helped me a day at a time to stay clean. Our message is hope that an addict, any addict, could stop using and lose the desire to use and find a new way of life with a promise of freedom. And simplicity is the key. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Shane.
We have 10 minutes. Anybody else like to share?
Good evening, group. My name is Eric, and I'm a grief recovering addict.
Hey, Eric.
And I also consider it an honor and privilege to come up here and speak today on the A step, because it is truly a step of freedom. But there's a flip side to the A step that I didn't hear too many people speak on. And the flip side to that A step is when I had to sit down and do mine, I also had to, along with writing down names of those I had harmed, I had to write down names of those who had harmed me. And I had to also become willing to make, you know, to forgive those who had harmed me. You know, in order to even begin to expect forgiveness for my harm and them. You know, for the people I had done damage to. And one thing about it, it also made me look at things like my father, my birth father, who abandoned me when I was six, and my parents. Made me think about the time when my mother left him the night before he was going to kill the whole family. He had us lined up on the bed with a rifle, and he was going to shoot us. But because of my addiction, I could go back and kind of look at him. You know, because he was also drunk that night. And, you know, and one addict and relating to another, you know, I had to see myself in him, that it could have been me. You know, and for whatever reason, he did the things he did were beyond my control. But I'm going to tell you, a beautiful thing came out of the fact that I walked around for years harboring grudges towards him because, you know, I never seen a card. I never never got a phone call, birthday, or come to get me, or any of those things, you know. And I walked around till I was 34 years of age before I could actually put an end to the damage that resentment was causing me. See, because, you know, resentment is the number one offender to an addict. You know, cause more addicts to go back out there than anything else. And during that step, like I say, there's a flip side to that coin, because to be forgiven, you have to be willing to forgive. You know, and I went to him, you know, because for years I expected him to come to me to make amends to me, you know. And it was something that happened to me. I was in a rehab, and I was in that rehab with a man that was in, you know, trying to recover. And his biggest pain was, he was an older guy, and the biggest pain that he was suffering was the fact that he would cry to me all the time about how his kids rejected him. And the rejection came because of the same thing that, like, I was rejecting my father. You know, and I thank God. I thank God put that man in my life for that particular reason. You know, out of all the people in the treatment center, this man gravitated to me. And through his eyes, I had a chance to see maybe what my father might have been going through. You know, and I thank God for it, because he had the first 6 years of my life, and because of me becoming willing to forgive him, regardless to the whys, the why nots, and all that, because those things were beyond my control. I had the last 6 years of his life, you know, which saved me. Because had he died, and I still carried that resentment that I had on my heart to the grave, you know, it would have done more damage to me than anything he could have ever done. Because for the simple reason, I had to love him, because without him, there would not have been a me. And with, you know, without him, I could not look back at the son that I have and say I love him. If I reason in that, you know, but the thing was, my willing to forgive him, you know, set me free and gave us some kind of relationship. Wasn't like the father and son that I had with my son, but we had a relationship. And when I looked upon him in that casket, I didn't have to feel any regrets, you know. And I thank y'all for hearing me.
Thanks for sharing.
We have 5 minutes if anybody else would like to share.
Hi, family. My name is Tamika, and I'm a recovering addict.
Hey, Tamika.
First, I want to thank God for giving me another day clean, bringing me to this process called Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I'm working on my first eighth step, and it's really hard because, first of all, it's like I'm learning that I have to forgive myself in order to forgive others. And I've always had that self-loathing to the point where it's hard for me to forgive myself about a lot of things. Like, I come down on, I beat myself up, you know, about a lot of different things. But just for me to just get the courage to come up here, that's growth. Because without working the other steps, you know, especially that fourth step, just getting in touch with Tamika, I wouldn't be able to do it, you know. And I'm shaking. I'm just grateful that for the first time in my life that I've committed myself to change on a daily basis. I fall short. Lord knows I fall short. But God has a plan for me, my sisters and brothers, and I can't give up on myself, because it's like I didn't have like that. My greatest battle was the battle within, you know? I mean, I didn't have to go out there. Like, I don't have the horror stories as far as the drugs itself, but I have the horror stories as far as the battles within myself, not knowing who I am. You know, I still battle with that, you know, the abandonment issues with my dad, you know, having, like, fear of men, you know, like, actually getting honest about that. Men scared the hell out of me, you know? And I know it stems from my dad, but see, that's something, that's my process. I still have to work on it. But like, as long as I stay in this process and I keep that focus on myself, no matter what I have to go through, I'm the type of addict where I have to go through a lot of stuff, a whole lot of pain before I change. I don't know why, but that's how it is for me. I mean, I have to fall about 1,000 times before I see the light, you know. Issues just reissue and just so on and so on, you know. But yeah, I am grateful, you know, that I'm here, that I'm taking a chance, you know, coming up here, talking about myself, trying to get honest, you know, dishonesty, Lord, that's a big one. But, you know, anybody that's coming to this program, I mean, this program really works when you work it. You know, if you really have a desire to change one day at a time, you know, and just, it's like remaining humble no matter what, you know, it's really worth it. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you.
Let's thank those who share, and can somebody come up and read just for today?